You are listening to the Better Together podcast, brought to you by the National Association of Free Will Baptists.
Welcome to the Better Together podcast, where we look for ways we can work together to advance the gospel of Jesus Christ. Today, we have Dr. Gary McIntosh. He's a longtime church consultant. Many of you have probably read some of his books. He's written some really good books about the 10 hats, or actually the 10 roles that pastors play. We often think of it as 10 hats, what every pastor should know, growing God's church. And he's actually the president of the Church Growth Network. So, Dr. McIntosh, thank you so much for joining us today, my friend.
Well, it is always good to be with you and to just share a little bit together. Thanks for having me back on.
Hey, thank you for writing this book, The Solo Pastor. This is a wonderful book. So I do encourage all of our pastors to get this book, and we'll send out more information about that later. But also, it's not a bad thing for lay people that are in a church that has a solo pastor. It's not a bad thing for you to kind of look at as well, to help your church to be as effective as it can. So, Dr. McIntosh, let's just start out with, what are some of the unique challenges that all your research that you've done, what are some of the unique challenges that pastors of solo churches, solo pastors have?
Well, let's start out first by just saying that about 66%, really about two-thirds of all churches in the USA are pastored by a single pastor. Now, that doesn't mean they don't have some help, but they have lay help. They don't have any other paid professional help, I guess you would say. So some denominations, though, are upwards of 90% solo pastors, but on the average, about 66% of them. Excuse me. You mentioned my previous book, The 10 Hats of a Pastor, or 10 Roles of a Pastor. That's one of the challenges they have, is that they wear all the hats in the church. One of the pastors wrote to me, he says, I was responsible for all the things the pastors do, preaching, counseling, visitation, leading. He says, I was the VBS director, the Awana director, the youth director, the worship leader, the small group coordinator, the Sunday school superintendent. You know, when I read that, I thought, yep, that's the solo pastor. Even though you have other people who help you, you're really responsible for everything. You know, everything kind of falls back on your desk. And that's a challenge. It certainly is today. But, you know, there's other challenges, too. Related to that is the number one response I got in my surveys of solo pastors was that they were lonely.
Yeah.
Even though they have lots of people around them, the people around them really don't understand the dynamics of what it is to be a pastor. And a lot of people in our churches, they come to church and they serve faithfully. Some of them give 8, 10, 15 hours a week. Most of them, though, when they go home, they kind of put that aside. Mm-hmm. But when a pastor goes home, it goes home with you. Yeah. You know, you wake up at 2:00 in the morning thinking about the church and the ministry. Now, there's some people in our churches who are so, you know, they're committed to the ministry enough, they do too. But it's being a solo pastor is like owning your own business in a sense. When you go home, you know, you take all the problems and the issues with you, and other people don't do that. And solo pastors find they just don't have anybody that they can really talk to who really understands what they're really facing in the church. And that creates kind of this loneliness where they feel like, well, they're just there all by themselves. And that was the number one challenge that they mentioned. I think I list about 15 or so different challenges. I'll just mention a couple of them here quickly. And that is, a lot of times pastors have to work in areas outside their expertise. So if you're not a good counselor, you still have to counsel. You know, if you're not a good organizer or planner. You still have to organize and plan. So in a larger church with multiple staff, you can kind of delegate away the things that you don't do well. And you can give them to somebody else who does a better job with that. But in a smaller church, as a solo pastor, you've got to do even the things you don't do well. And that's tiring. Actually, when you work outside of your giftedness, it actually takes more energy, emotional, spiritual, physical energy to do that. Yeah. So anyway, that's a couple of them, but there's quite a few. I give, like I say, a whole big list in there. Pastors told me, but the number one was they're lonely.
And so one of the things we've done, I think I've talked to you about this in the past, is we know we at least have 56% of our pastors are solo. That's one survey. I suspect it's higher than that. That's just who respond to the survey. But trying to have Zoom meetings, pastor hangouts, there's one of those today where guys can kind of get together. In the book, you talk about, though, getting with other pastors in the community, trying to push back on that, because it's just different than a multi-staff church.
Well, it is. And I think one of the blessings that we have today that was not there when I was pastoring, I was pastoring in the 1970s and 80s before I went into teaching. In those days, honestly, Eddie, there was such a feeling of competition between the pastors that when we got together, there really wasn't any honest sharing. There wasn't any honest support. It was just too competitive of an atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I think to a large extent today that does not exist in the same way. Mm-hmm. And I find that a lot of pastors can get together today in a very supportive environment and really share together, share their hearts, pray with one another, care for one another. And I think as a solo pastor, you really have to seek out those opportunities, whether it's with people within your own faith tribe, or even sometimes across the line to other faith tribes. You know, mm-hmm. we realize today that our enemy is not each other, but it's Satan. You know, it's the devil,
right.
It's the world, it's culture, and we really need the support of each other, particularly as a solo pastor.
Absolutely. So we want to take advantage of some of those opportunities. And I do encourage folks to pick up the book, because there's far more that you talk about the challenges and how a solo church is unique. But one of the things you do in the book, which I like so good, is you don't just leave it there. You know, you say, but, you know, we have to lead. And one of the things I wanted you to get into a little bit was bullies. It feels like we hear that over and over again, working with churches. Dealing with a church bully, sometimes it can even feel like it's a whole family. And I think you write in here, like if there's a lot of that, you know, in solo churches as well. So why don't you break down a little bit about what do I do as a solo pastor in that area? Because that's one of the things that comes up.
Well, that's true. And one of the things I wanted to do in this book is I wanted to be real.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, having been a solo pastor myself, and of course working with a lot of solo pastors, I know that one of the challenges they have is dealing with that one person or that one family in the church that is all powerful.
Yes.
is controlling, and they just can't seem to get anything done because of that particular person. I think the good thing to remember is that this is nothing new, that even the Apostle John talks about this in the book of 3 John. He talks about Diotrephes, who seems to have many of the characteristics of a church bully. And so I won't get into that because it's in the book, and you know, we don't have time to get into talking about the Diotrephes a bit. But I also want to mention too that bullies are not always bad people.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a family that has really been in the church for many years. They love the church. honestly, if it wasn't for them, the church would have maybe closed its doors in some cases. But they're good people sometimes, but they, over the years, have gained such a foothold in the control of the church, and they won't let the pastor lead. And they don't even realize sometimes that they're doing it. But on the other hand, sometimes there are those bullies that are actually just mean-spirited and difficult. So I spend a lot of time, a whole chapter, I think, talking about bullies and, you know, how to work with them and to deal with them. I think one of the things that pastors have to do is right from the beginning, they have to stand firm as the pastor and not let the bully basically gain that control over them at the beginning. For instance, I had an experience with this when I was a pastor. I had gone to my very, very first church as a preaching pastor. And after I'd been there about a month, one of the gentlemen in the church who was in control, there were two gentlemen in the church who were very strong, controlling people. He took me to lunch. And he said to me, Gary, he said, the last pastor always cleared his sermon topics with me before he preached. And he says, I really think you should do that too. I'd like for you each week to call me and tell me what you're going to preach in and get clearance for me before you preach that on Sunday. Well, as a young pastor, I could have just said, well, okay, you know, but I guess part of it was my personality or something, you know, but I could see what he was doing.
Yeah.
And I just graciously looked at him and I said, you know, I really feel like the Lord tells me what to preach on. And so I'll just choose my own sermon topics. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So I think that's an example. You have to stand your ground. You have to stand firm. You don't have to do it in a mean way, but you have to let them know that you are not going to be cowed by them. You're not going to be controlled by them.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's just one example. And I'm sure there's other examples we could come up with that would be more of a dangerous situation, you know, in terms of leadership for the church. But I think that's where it starts. You have to decide that you're the pastor. God has put you there. And in a very gracious way, you're going to be firm and you're going to stand your ground. You're going to be wise about it. You're not going to get yourself fired or pushed out of the church. But you're going to, right from the beginning, let them know that they're not going to control you. And so I think that's kind of where it begins. I think that you get to know the church. You get to know this person. You don't ask questions, find out who this person is, find out why they seem to be this controlling person, you know?
Yeah.
Is there some hurt in their life? You know, the old adage is that hurting people hurt people.
Yeah.
So a lot of times bullies have been hurt in the past, sometimes by a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe just another family in the church or something. And so I found that it's very wise to find out as much as you can about them. What is their history? What has been their history in the church? You know, what have other people seen them do? What people have done in the past are likely to do in the future.
Yeah.
And so I remember one church I was consulting in where there was one man who always got angry. He always shouted. He always screamed. Well, once you know that that person does that, then you can be prepared for it. So I think the second thing is that you get to know the person, find out their history. Sometimes that gives you insight into how to work with them or, you know, why they are the way they are. I think that... you know, what you do too is you Try as much as possible to deal with the issues in the church, not with the person. So try not to get into a battle of personalities, I guess you would say, but to always try and keep the focus on the issue that you're dealing with in the church. Sometimes that's very difficult to do because our personalities get wrapped up into the issues that we're dealing with. But as much as possible, we separate the issue from the personality as much as we can. One other thing, and that is, again, I deal with this a little more extensively in the book, but I think one of the best ways to deal with bullies is you ask them questions. So rather than coming directly at them and confronting them, what you do is you sit back and you ask them questions. So if they get angry, for instance, you can say to them, where did that anger come from? Or if they come up with a demand or something, well, how did you arrive at that demand? You try and ask them questions that forces them to reveal at a deeper level what they're feeling, what they're thinking, where they're coming from. And I found that that helps a lot, particularly if you're a younger pastor with an older person. It's hard for a younger person to confront an older person, and maybe not even appropriate to do that. But a younger person can always ask questions.
Yes.
Well, tell me, Bob, why do you get so angry? Or tell me, Bob, where have you been hurt in the past by a pastor? Or tell me, Bob, how did you arrive at that conclusion? It's always appropriate to ask questions.
That's good.
And it draws them out.
And we've still got the lead, don't we? So we've still got to do the work of the church. And I think you've shared that real well in the book as well, talking about, I think you used the phrase taking charge, but still trying to figure out, what can we do to advance the gospel to help our church to continue to go forward?
Right. Someone always leads. And, we know theologically that Jesus Christ is the leader of his church, but we also know that he has under shepherds that he places in the church. And if we, the pastors, aren't leading, somebody else will. Leadership abhors a vacuum, as a leadership abhors a vacuum. So when there's a vacuum of leadership, somebody always steps in to lead. And usually it's a person we don't want to lead, the bully. We have to lead, If we lead, then there's not a vacuum of leadership there for that bully to step into. But I found a lot of times solo pastors, they just don't step in there with any idea of a vision or direction of the church or ideas. And then there's a vacuum, and then other people step in there. And sometimes, like I say, it's the person we don't want.
So I really encourage folks to get a copy of the book, The Solo Pastor, because you talk about how you lead when you have few resources. You talk about how you lead by communicating well. And there's even a section in there about dealing with boards, which some folks really love, some folks may not as much. So I think you talk all about how we have to step up as a solo pastor and lead in those situations. And it's really well done, Dr. McIntosh. I appreciate you taking the time to write it, do the research, and put it together. It's good stuff, my friend.
I appreciate that so much. This is one of those books that really kind of came out of my heart. I love small church pastors. I love solo pastors. And by the way, solo pastors are not always in small churches. I was up in Cleveland, Ohio a few years ago, and there was a solo pastor of a church of 1,200 people.
Wow.
They had one paid pastor in a church of 1,200, and it just shocked me. I thought, how can this be? Well, he was tired.
Yeah.
Now, he had he had some help, you know, he had volunteer help, but still, you know, it amazed me.
But
I've had a lot of solo pastors in churches of 400 or so, you know, it's not always a small church.
Not always. And you're right about this. It's always been, you know, this is part of what we see throughout history. So we find ourselves in that situation instead of looking for the greener grass somewhere else or bemoaning our situation. Really, the Lord has given us some tools, and you've helped lay them out here that we can use to be effective in reaching our communities with the gospel. So good job on this.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah. We want to thank all of you who've joined us today as well. If you know someone that would benefit from this podcast, please take it, share it with them. We encourage you to get a copy of the book. We'll have information on that on the Facebook site. Remember, every little thing we do is helpful. Every little bit we do for the Lord makes a difference. We truly are better together.